This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another 60 minutes of crime stories. We'll begin this week with Dragnet, their episode The Big Switch from November 23rd, 1954. After that, it's Whitehall 1212 and The Case of Dougal Henry. That episode aired August 17th, 1952.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned the homicide detail. A call comes into the office. A woman says her husband is dead. She thinks he's been murdered. Your job? Investigate.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, July 8th. It was sunny in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. It was 11.03 a.m. when we got to 906 South Norwood Street. Front door. Hi, Friday and Smith, homicide.
How are you? Carly, 1F14.
Hi, Carly.
Mrs. Pilson, the victim's wife, is back in the bedroom. Pretty broken up about it.
Uh-huh. What about the victim?
Name's George Pilson, age 57. No children. Just he and his wife live here. That's about all I got. She cried so much, I thought it might be better to let her rest until you got here.
That's a good idea. Where's the body?
In the other bedroom. I'll show you.
All right.
Because she felt so bad, I thought maybe she'd like me to call her doctor. Said she didn't want any.
Uh-huh.
Mrs. Pilson's right across the hall.
Right. That's a head wound.
Yeah. Looks like somebody was serious.
Yeah. Now we're going to need the lab and latent prints.
You want me to call him?
Yeah. Better call the coroner, too, will you, please?
Right.
Thank you. The way he's lying here, position of his hands outside the covers, doesn't look like there was much of a struggle, does it?
Oh. Could have been asleep when he got it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Better talk to his wife, huh?
Yeah.
Miss Pilson. Miss Pilson, police officers.
Who is it?
Police officers. We'd like to talk to you. Sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but we'd appreciate it if you tell us what you know about all this.
All right. You want to go in the front room?
All right, that'll be fine. You go ahead, please.
I couldn't talk to the other policemen.
We understand.
Calls are all in, Sergeant. Anything else I can do?
No, thanks, Carly. We'll handle it now.
Right, I'll shove off then.
Miss Pilson, this is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Uh-huh.
How are you, ma'am?
This is like so many other mornings. Except nobody sat in his chair like you are, Mr. Friday. I used to sit here and it was quiet. I didn't want to disturb George's sleep.
Well, then your husband usually slept during the morning hours, is
yes.
that right?
Yes. He worked nights at the Belden Aircraft Company.
All right. Would you tell us what happened?
What is it to tell? He came from shopping and found him just like he is now.
Do you remember what time it was?
I don't know for sure. 10:30. Somewhere around there.
When did you leave the house?
About the same time I usually do. I couldn't do my housework in the morning. Didn't want to disturb George.
Mm-hmm. About when would that be?
About 9 o'clock.
Was your husband asleep when you left?
Yes. He never closed the door, and I looked in before I left.
When you left the house this morning, did you lock the house?
The back door was locked. Never locked the front, but I'm just going to be gone for a short while.
I see.
It doesn't take me more than 2 hours to shop at the most.
Do you know if your husband had any enemies, Miss Pilson?
Well, not that I know of. He might have, but he never said anything to me about them.
Mm-hmm. Probably won't take offense, but we have to ask this. How did you and your husband get along?
I guess I should have known that I'd be suspect, too.
Well, we have to ask it.
I know, Mr. Friday. You men are strangers. How could you know what our marriage was like? And how do you sum up 30 years in one or two sentences? Good, bad, and happy. Unhappy. It was all those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think our life is much different than most couples. Maybe one exception. You see over there on the table?
Yes, ma'am.
In my collection of elephants. I started collecting them as a little girl. I always thought that one day I'd have a little girl. I'd give them to her. We never had any children.
Mm-hmm.
So my children have been pretend. I've kept adding to the collection all these years. Each new elephant is one that my little girl, or perhaps a little boy, would have added.
I see.
I was wrong before about something I said.
How's that?
I said you were strangers.
Yes.
You're not, really. Otherwise, I wouldn't have told you about the elephants.
Yes, ma'am. Then you and your husband haven't had any quarrels recently.
Usual words. Nothing serious, though.
Now, there's something else we'll have to know.
Yes.
Do you know if any personal property is missing?
Stolen, you mean?
That's right.
Well, I'd have to look first.
What if you do that for us?
Right now?
Yes, ma'am. If you feel up to it, we'd appreciate it if you could.
You want to know about the bedroom, too?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
One other thing, Miss Pilson.
Yes.
Was your husband in the habit of carrying large sums of money on his person, would you know?
Oh, no. Usually carried some cash, but never large amounts.
I see. All right, would you like to start checking now, Miss Pilson?
Do you mind if we sit a moment longer?
No, it's all right. Take your time.
I was just remembering how like other days this is. I'd sit here reading and maybe just looking at my elephants and thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It would be real quiet, and the clock would strike 12. I'd go in and wake George.
Yes, ma'am.
Shall we go in?
Yes, if you're ready.
It's not quite time. That won't make any difference now.
Beg your pardon?
He won't hear us.
When we checked the bedroom, Ms. Pilson told us her husband's watch and diamond ring were missing. She said as far as she could determine, nothing else had been taken from the house. In the meantime, crews from the crime lab and Leighton Prince arrived. Frank called the office, and they ran the names George and Marie Pilson through R&I. They called back later to say they could find no record on either one of them. Further questioning of the victim's wife failed to give us any definite lead as to who our suspect might be. We left the home and began to question some of the neighbors. 1:14 p.m., we rang the bell at the house directly across the street. We identified ourselves, and Sam Mordell, the occupant, admitted it. We went into the front room.
I was beginning to think I'd have to go look you fellas up.
How do you mean that, sir?
I saw the cars and activity over at the Pilsons. I couldn't figure out what it was. I thought it must be trouble of some kind. Curiosity just about got the best of me.
Uh-huh.
Grab a chair. Might as well be comfortable while you're here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Miss Mordell.
Don't mind all the wood shavings on the floor. You see, I'm a wood carver. It's not my job. It's just a hobby. I'm retired. I'm a railroad man.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Had a rug in here, but I took it out. I always like those eating places with the sawdust on the floor. You know the kind. Of course, shavings aren't sawdust, but then it's easier to save them this way, too.
Yes, sir. I wonder if you'd answer a few questions for us.
Sure thing. Anyhow, if I keep on gabbing, I won't find out what this is all about. You go ahead and ask your questions.
Thank you. Do you usually sit in that chair when you work?
Sure do. Seldom miss a day. I call this my cab window.
What's that, sir?
Cab window. I used to be an engineer. Sort of got used to looking out and enjoying the scenery as it went by.
Oh.
Of course, now the view doesn't change much, but I still like to see what's going on in the neighborhood.
Yes, sir. Were you sitting here this morning, sir?
Yeah. Don't miss many days. I haven't the time. I have to get this chain finished. A lot of work to carve at the wood chain.
Yes, sir. Would you remember seeing anybody around the Pilson residence this morning?
You mean besides Mrs. Pilson?
You saw her, did you?
Sure. She went shopping. She always goes Wednesday morning, of course, unless the weather is bad.
Yes, sir. Did you see anybody else?
Yes. Saw a fella come out of there while Mrs. Pilson was at the store.
Saw a man come out of the house?
Yeah.
Would you remember what time that was?
10 o'clock sharp.
You sure of that?
That's right. You see this watch?
Yes, sir.
They gave me this when I retired. You can see what it says on the back. See? See? Look.
Mm-hmm. It's real nice.
Railroad watch. Doesn't vary a bit. I don't get a newspaper, so I listen to the radio news when I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
Always check the time they come on. Because I know that my watch is right. Sometimes a couple of seconds late or early. Mostly, though, pretty much on schedule. Make good railroad men.
Yes, sir.
It was 10 o'clock sharp by my watch. Program was 3 seconds late.
Yes, sir. Now, did you see that man go in?
No. I went out to make a pot of coffee.
How long were you out of the room?
20 minutes. Never take any more than 20 minutes. Do you mind if I carve while we talk? I've got to get this chain finished. They're going to get a new record.
Yes, sir. All right. Could you describe this man for us?
Sure. But I can give you a better clue than that.
What's that, Mr. Medill?
He had a truck.
Go ahead, Mike.
Printing on the side.
Uh-huh.
Man's name. Said he shot in lawnmowers.
Do you know the name?
Well, I'm not real sure. Either Ray or Gray.
Was there an address?
Yeah, it was a letter too small. Anyhow, I wasn't too interested. I sharpened my own mower.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us what kind of a truck it was?
Not the make, but it was a closed-in kind. Green color. Didn't look too new.
Uh-huh. And you say the name on the side was either Ray or Gray, is that it?
Yeah, my eyes are good yet, but only the Ray part was real clear. It looked like there could have been another letter in the front, though.
Uh-huh.
Just thought of something.
Yes, sir.
It didn't have to be Gray. Could have been Bray or Tray.
Yes, sir. We can check that out.
Now, can I ask you something?
What's that, sir?
What's the trouble?
Well, Mr. Pilson's dead.
Huh. Well, couldn't have been a natural death, or you fellows wouldn't be asking questions. That's too bad. George is a pretty good neighbor.
Is that right, sir?
Be tough on his wife, too, being married so long and all. I went to their 25th anniversary. Isn't easy to go on alone. I lost my wife 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not when you've been happy. It's not easy.
Yes, sir. Mr. Mordell, you said you could give us a description of the man you saw coming out of Pilsen.
Yeah, and if he had anything to do with George's death, he's going to get what I wanted for so long.
What's that, sir?
That's when you catch him, I mean.
Yeah.
He'll get his name in the paper.
How's that again, sir?
That's why I'm carving this chain. It's going to be the longest chain ever carved out of a single piece of wood.
Oh, I see.
Almost made it a couple other times. Then I got too anxious and botched the whole thing. See there? Shavings?
Yes, sir.
When I finish, I'm going to sweep them all up and weigh them. You know, give the reporters something to write about.
Well, sir, I hope this one turns out for you.
Thanks. I'll make it this time. Maybe it won't be on the front page, but my name will be in the paper, too.
We can be sure of one thing.
Yeah?
You picked a little better way to get there. Sam Wardell gave us a description of the man that he'd seen. We called the office and got out a local broadcast, and then we went back to the Pilsen house. We found a lawnmower in the backyard. Mrs. Pilsen said her husband had sent the lawnmower out to be sharpened, but she didn't know who the man was that did the work. We checked the classified directory, and we found the name Gray's Lawnmower Service. The listing had been underlined in pencil. Frank and I drove to the address, 2604 Royal Street. It was a small shop set well back from the street. The place was locked. A clock sign on the door read, "We'll be back at," and the hand pointed to 4:30. We parked across the street and we waited. At 4:43 p.m., a man answering the description we'd been given unlocked the door and entered the shop. 4:45 p.m.
Ah, hiya. Either this is perfect timing or you've been waiting for me.
We're police officers.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess that writes off the timing part.
Is your name Gray?
No, it's Para.
Do you work for a man named Gray?
Uh-uh. It's my own business. I bought it from him.
I see.
He'd been here for some 20 years, so I just kept the name.
Do you pick up and deliver in your business?
Yeah.
Well, then you have a truck.
That's right.
What kind?
Panel job, a Dodge.
What color?
Green. Look, I don't mind answering questions. I know you got a job to do, but the way I see it, this question and answer game plays better if we both know what counts and what doesn't. How about it?
Well, for the time being, let's just say you called it, huh?
Yeah?
We got a job to do.
That's it.
It'll have to be for now.
All right, I don't want to buck you guys. I got nothing to hide, but I get the same feeling when somebody won't cash a check for me.
Yeah.
And it galls me to think I'm lined up as a bad risk.
We're not accusing you of anything. Now, we'd appreciate your cooperation, but try and keep this in mind. We'll still get what we came here for. Now, you make the choice how you want it.
Okay, what are you after, hot lawnmowers?
You said you made deliveries, is that right?
Yeah.
Do you keep a record of the calls you make?
Sure.
Can we see the record?
Yeah, if you want, the book's over at the desk in the drawer. I'll get it.
I'll get it.
What'd you expect? I was going to pull a gun out of the drawer?
That's the one?
Yeah.
Here you are, Joe.
Thanks. These all the calls for today?
That's right.
Austin, Kemper, when'd you make these calls?
What time?
That's right.
Well, Kemper this morning, Austin this afternoon.
They're the only ones you made today, huh?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me see the book a second. It isn't here. I guess I forgot to enter it.
What's that?
Another call I made.
What was that?
On Norwood Street, 906, I think it was.
Remember the name?
Pilfen.
What time were you there?
I'm not sure. 9:30 or so, I guess.
Who'd you talk to?
Nobody. Didn't see anyone around.
Did you go in the house?
Why?
Did you?
Yeah, I rang the bell a couple times, and I knocked.
Yeah.
Well, I thought maybe they were in the back of the house and couldn't hear me. The door was open a little, so I walked in.
Yeah.
Went in the front room, called out, didn't get any answer, so I left.
You didn't leave the front room?
That's right.
Did you see anybody?
I told you I didn't. What more do you want?
You said you called out.
Yeah?
How loud?
What do you mean?
Loud enough to wake a person sleeping in a back bedroom, maybe?
Well, I guess so. No one answered. It came out. I know that.
All
right. Well, was there someone there when I called?
That's right.
Well, ask them then. I don't know what you're getting at. I walked into a house. I didn't do anything wrong there. If there was someone there, ask them.
Be a little hard to do.
Huh?
He's dead. We took Para back to the office and questioned him further. He continued to maintain his innocence. We ran his name through R&I and found a package for him showing one arrest for suspicion of ADW as a juvenile. We booked him on suspicion of 187 PC, murder, and Frank and I went back to his shop. We thoroughly searched both the building and his truck, but we failed to turn up either the ring or the watch. Thursday morning, Leighton Prince reported that they'd found no fingerprints in the house other than those of the victim and his wife. We got a call from Ray Pinker in the crime lab. He said that George Pilsen had been beaten about the head with some type of round instrument. He also substantiated our theory that there had been a little struggle on the part of the victim. We called the county morgue, and Dr. Seffel, who said he'd notify us as soon as he posted the body. 11:26 a.m.
Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Just checking over these time elements.
Yeah.
Mrs. Pilsen left at 9. It's gone about an hour and a half. The neighbors saw Para leave the house at 10, right?
Yep.
And if Mordell is right about how long he was gone from his front window, Para could have been there about 20 minutes.
That's the way it checks out.
Well, give him enough time, don't you think?
Well, we still got to figure maybe he's telling us the truth.
Yeah.
And if he is, that gives us several possibilities. When Pilsen didn't answer, maybe it's because he couldn't.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I got it. Homicide Friday. Yeah. It was, yeah. I see. Right. You're right over. It's Doc Cephalo who just finished posting the body.
Yeah.
It's possible that Pilsen wasn't killed by the head blow.
What do you mean?
He might have been dead before he was hit. Dr. Cephalou said he'd found evidence of a barbiturate in the victim's body in a quantity large enough to kill him. He also pointed out that the lack of profuse bleeding from the head wounds led him to believe that the victim was dead before the beating occurred. Frank and I drove out to the Pilsen residence. We talked to the victim's wife. We explained to her that it was necessary that we know more about her husband's physical condition prior to his death. We went into the front room and sat down.
Try to answer your questions, but today I'm just beginning to realize what it's going to be like being alone.
Yes, ma'am, we can understand that. We'll try to be as brief as possible.
Thank you.
Now, had your husband been under a doctor's care recently?
No.
Had he been in good mental spirits?
Yes.
He didn't seem unusually worried about anything?
Not that I know of.
Well, now, would you tell us about yourself, Ms. Pilsen?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, have you been under a doctor's care recently?
No. What has all this to do with my husband's death?
Well, we'd like to know if there would be any reason for you or your husband to have a prescription for a strong barbiturate in the house.
A what?
A sedative, ma'am.
You mean to make you sleep?
That's right.
No, we did never use them.
Then you haven't had any in the house recently?
Well, I haven't. I don't think George did.
Would it be possible that your husband could have used a barbiturate and you didn't know about it?
Yes, but if he did, I'm sure he'd have told me. We didn't have secrets from each other.
I see.
I'll get it.
Oh, Marie, you poor thing. I just got back and heard the terrible news and came right over.
Thank you, Lydia. But could you come back later?
Well, sure, dear. Is there anything I can do for you?
Maybe, but I can't talk now.
All right, Marie. Are the police here?
Yes. But won't you come back later?
Have you told them?
Yes.
You told them what George tried to do?
Yes.
Excuse me, ma'am. Couldn't help overhearing your conversation.
Oh, you're the policeman?
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Marie's neighbor.
Yes, we understand. What did you mean about Mr. Pilsen trying to do something?
Well, she didn't mean anything. She was just talking.
Now, look, let's let her tell it, shall we?
Maybe I shouldn't have said anything.
What did you mean, ma'am?
Maybe it's not important.
Why don't you tell us anyway?
George tried to kill Marie.
We brought the neighbor, Lydia Shires, into the house for further questioning. She explained that she was a close friend of Marie Pilson's. It was quite evident that Mrs. Pilson didn't want her friend to talk to us.
If I had any idea I was going to cause all this trouble, I'd never come over. I only meant to help Marie.
Would you tell us why you said that Mr. Pilson was trying to kill his wife?
Sure, but Marie can tell you better than I can. Oh, now, honey, don't get upset. It's going to work out all right. Well, I'll tell you what I know, but Marie will have to fill in the details.
All right, go ahead, please.
Her last week it was, she came over to my house, terribly worried. She's afraid she's going to have another nervous breakdown.
Oh, please don't, Marie, please don't.
Now, don't fret, dear. We all want to help you.
Miss Pilson, once more, had you been under a doctor's care recently?
It was George, her husband, that made her sick. Kept telling her she was going crazy, said she was going to die. Finally, she got to believe in the things he was saying.
Yeah.
That's when she had the breakdown.
How long ago was this?
About 3 weeks ago.
All right, go ahead, will you?
Well, George got these pills for her, something for her nerves to make her rest.
Yeah.
That may be our office, I'll get it.
All right.
Hello. That's right. No, he isn't. You want to tell me who's calling? Would you like to leave a message? No, my name's Smith. She hung up. Woman asking for Mr. Pilson.
Did she give her name?
No, said she was a friend of the family.
It was her. I know it. I wish I'd talked to her.
Who was it, Miss Pilson?
I don't know her name, but she lied. She's no friend of mine. She caused all this.
How do you mean?
That's why George was trying to kill me. With me out of the way, he could have her. She'd come and live in my home.
Marie, you never told me about her.
I still had some pride.
All right, now this medicine your husband got, was it a barbiturate?
Yes. That's how he was going to kill me.
Where'd he get the pill?
I don't know. George would come in and sit on my bed in the early morning. When he'd come in from work, he'd wake me up. Tell me I was going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
Time after time he did it. I began to think he was right. I couldn't remember doing things.
That's when you started taking these pills, huh?
Yes, that's right.
I see.
He'd put them in my food or in my drink.
You sure he did that?
Yes. I counted the capsules in the bottle every time I took one. Got so I couldn't remember if I'd taken them or not, so I counted them.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the number down on paper so I'd be sure. Some were always missing. I knew he'd been giving them to me.
All right, go ahead.
That's when I told Lydia about it. She said to stop.
Is that right, Miss Shire?
Yeah, I told her not to take any more.
Did you stop taking a sedative?
Yes. I told George about what Lydia said. He got mad and said I shouldn't have gone to her. And he started telling me I'd go crazy if I didn't take them. He kept after me.
Is that why you killed him, Miss Pilson?
Can't mean Marie did it.
He kept after me. I knew he was trying to get rid of me. He'd stay out all night when he wasn't working.
Did he tell you about the other woman?
No, he didn't have to. I knew. A couple of times she called here. I answered the phone. When she heard my voice, she hung up.
So you gave him the pills you'd been taking, is that it?
To make him sleep. I always had a sandwich when he came home from work. I fixed it before I went to bed.
When'd you strike him?
When I came home from the market, I suppose. You'll want the weapon, won't you?
Yeah, I'm the watch and the ring, too.
All right.
Marie, how could you do it?
Had to be. He was going to kill me. She was going to live at my home with my children. Lydia.
Yeah?
I want you to take my family.
What?
My elephants. I want you to have them.
All right, Marie.
Do you want to tell us where the weapon is, Miss Pilson?
All right. I didn't believe George. That he was telling the truth.
Yeah.
He told me this would happen.
What then?
He said I was crazy.
The story you've just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On November 3rd, trial was held in Department 97, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Marie Ellen Pilson was examined by three psychiatrists appointed by the state and found to be insane. She was confined to Mendocino State Hospital for the criminally insane for treatment.
You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb
A presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
This is Scotland Yard.
For the first time in its history, Scotland Yard opens its official files to bring you the true stories of some of its most interesting and baffling cases.
These are the true stories, the plain, unvarnished facts, just as they occurred, reenacted for you by an all-British cast. These stories are presented with the full cooperation of Scotland Yard.
Research on Whitehall 1212 is prepared by Percy Hoskins, chief crime reporter of the London Daily Express. The stories for radio are written and directed by Willis Cooper. The next voice you will hear is that of Chief Superintendent John Davidson, custodian of Scotland Yard's famous Black Museum.
Good afternoon. Would you have a cigarette? No, I'm sorry, not this case. This is the exhibit from the Black Museum, and it has fingerprints on it. Besides, if that makes any difference, it's empty. Yeah, one of these, if you don't mind. I smoke them myself. Woodbine. Well, if you insist on one of your own, then this case had a great deal to do with a murder case back in the last year of the First World War, 1918. It was owned by an army officer. That's a curious mark on the outside of the case, isn't it? A scar, almost, you'd call it. Tis a scar. Bullet scar. And here's the man to tell you how it came into our possession here at the Black Museum, Scotland Yard. Superintendent, then Inspector, Norman Gray.
Yes, been a long time since I've seen this case, Chief Superintendent. I remember the night quite well. September 26, 1918, the day the Yanks began their fantastic offensive in the Argonne Woods in France. I remember the telephone call I received that night, about 9:15.
Inspector Gregg, will you go at once, please, to a house at 131 Ladbroke Grove, please?
What's up, old boy?
Chap's been shot, that's all I know, sir.
Right, 131 Ladbroke Grove.
Right, sir.
I am on my way. In a few minutes, thanks to one of the earliest of Scotland Yard's motor vehicles, I alighted near number 131 Ladbroke Grove, which is a fairly posh address. My knock on the door was answered by a lanky gentleman with a large black moustache, wearing a uniform with the crowns and red tabs of a staff major and the flaming grenade badges of the Royal Fusiliers. "What's up, sir?" I asked, remembering to say sir.
"I'm Major Robert Henry, officer. My brother's been shot."
I looked past him, and on the sitting room floor, another officer was lying, bleeding from what appeared to be several wounds. I looked more closely. He was gasping.
My brother, Captain Dougal Henry, officer of the KRRCs.
Who shot him?
An intruder, a burglar, a housebreaker.
Where's he?
Escaped, I'm afraid. Can you do anything about my brother? I've tried, but...
Sorry, sir.
Dougal.
He can't hear you, sir.
Is he? Is he?
Yes, sir. Now, sir, what happened?
Dougal, old boy.
What happened?
There's nothing...
Nothing, sir. I'm sorry. He's dead. What happened?
He was in the library talking with Major Ward.
Where's Major Ward, please?
He's in the library. Edmund...
May I go in the library, sir? Is that it?
Edmund's in there.
And so he was.
Oh, I say.
Are you Major Ward, sir?
Yes.
May I have that revolver, sir?
Huh? Yes, of course. I'm afraid I fired it.
At whom, sir?
At the burglar.
The man who killed my brother.
But I'm afraid I missed him. I'm not a very good shot.
He didn't miss.
No.
No.
Poor Dougal. Is he dead?
He is. Oh. You didn't give me a revolver, sir.
Oh, excuse me.
Thank you. This your service revolver, sir?
Yes, of course. One goes on leave.
Of course. Webley, caliber 38.
Issue.
You're in the London Irish Rifles, sir.
174 Brigade.
You know this gentleman?
One of my dearest friends.
That's right, dearest friends.
He'd been at my home this evening.
Oh?
Before we came here.
Oh?
That can easily be proved, officer.
I'll not require that, sir, now.
Well...
You were on good terms with the dead man?
I...
Of course he was. What are you implying, officer?
Only that I never saw either of you gentlemen before, sir. Nor him.
I'll have you understand that...
May I remind you, sir, that nobody has told me what happened?
Well...
I'll tell him, Edmund.
Thank you.
Please.
I tell you quite simply, Constable.
Inspector, sir.
Oh, excuse me. I was sitting here looking over the overseas edition of the Daily Mail.
The one our soldiers received
in France. Major Ward and my brother were talking in the library while I waited. We were all going to dinner shortly.
And carriages,
please.
Yes. Well, there was an infernal noise in the library. Scuffling. Shots fired. I jumped up.
Just as I came hurrying out.
And told me.
Said a burglar just shot poor Dougal and I think I've wounded him.
Wounded whom?
The burglar man.
Wounded whom, Major Ward?
Eh?
Wounded whom?
Oh. The burglar, of course. Just as he was clambering out the window with his arms full of...
He had already killed Captain Henry.
Yes, of course.
Yes, of course.
But I didn't know he was dead then.
How did he get in?
The burglar?
Yes.
I don't...
I haven't the faintest idea. One minute we were alone, and the next minute there he was, pointing a gun at Dougal.
And you shot at him?
I certainly did.
I see you fired all the chambers of your revolver, sir.
I'm afraid I didn't hit him, though.
You fired at him, though?
He did. I heard him.
Bullets are probably in the walls. We'll find them.
Of course.
Of course. How'd he get out?
Out the window, the way he came in.
And he did take something?
Well, what did he take, Edmund?
Oh, that silver tankard that always used to stand on your desk.
It belonged to my grandfather.
I'm sorry I didn't kill him.
It's too bad, Major. Now we must find him.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Do you think you could describe him, Major?
I know.
Well, partly.
Eh?
I could describe him partially, officer. Little chap. Ruddy face. Ginger hair, I thought. But I'm not sure. I was shooting at him.
Yes, yes, but you missed
him. Missed him.
And I wish... Oh, what should we do now?
I think our first task is to get this dead man out of here.
Dougal.
Yes, I don't think he'll be much help.
What's that, sir?
Why, I said...
A dead man are quite often useful, sir. Murdered men, I mean, sir.
I'm afraid I don't understand that, sir.
Why, sir, a murdered man is often the only one who knows who killed him. Except the man who did it, of course. May I telephone Scotland Yard, sir? Major Robert Henry stood and watched sorrowfully as the detail I summoned from Scotland Yard loaded up his brother's body and started away to the mortuary with it. Where's Major Ward, I asked?
He's lying down.
Matter?
After all, old chap, he's just seen a very close friend shot down in cold blood.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. But he's a combat officer, I notice. Surely he's seen a good many other close friends of his killed.
I doubt he's seen any who were closer than Dougald.
Oh?
They've been pals since they were kids. I'm a good deal older than Dougald. Never was much of a brother to him, you know. Ward's just his age. He was the brother, in effect.
Oh, yeah?
Dreadful blow to him, especially under the circumstances.
Circumstances?
Yes. Ward was shell-shocked.
Oh.
Buried alive by a shell burst not 2 weeks ago. Yes, they didn't get him out for 5 hours. Totally unconscious. The dead man lying across his knees.
Horrible.
Unconscious, I said. Perfectly conscious the first few minutes, though remember the worst part of it. Then to come home and see his best friend murdered before his very eyes.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that, sir.
Of course you didn't. How could you? Never saw him before. Did you?
I remember him now.
What? Oh. Oh, you've seen his picture. Everyone's seen it.
I remembered it from the illustrated papers when he was married.
To Marjorie Carswell.
Marjorie Carswell, about 6 years ago. Before the war.
Dougal was groomsman at the wedding.
Oh?
He was godfather to the first child, too.
Yes. Yes, I remember now.
Dougal's been stationed here in London for a year now, attached to some American something or other, while Ward's been overseas.
Oh, yes?
As soon as he heard Ward was home on sick leave, he popped out to Carling Hill. That's where Ward lives, Carling Hill.
Did you say that was tonight, sir?
This afternoon and tonight.
Oh, yes. You said your brother returned here.
He and Ward were booked for dinner at Claridge's. I asked them to stop past for a cocktail.
Yes, I remember.
They were in the library talking when this burglar, or whatever he was, entered, and... Well, you know the rest.
Yes, sir. Mrs. Ward's still at Carling Hill, is it?
Yes.
She doesn't know anything about this. Or perhaps you telephoned her.
No, I didn't. I don't believe Ward did either. Quite understandable if he didn't, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I was wondering...
Yes, sir?
I was wondering if I hadn't better go down to this mortuary place where they took poor Dougal, you know.
Well, sir...
What?
Oh, I shouldn't if I were you, sir.
Look here, why not?
Well, sir, the police surgeon will be examining the body now.
Well, what difference does that make?
You won't be able to see your brother, sir.
Oh, what'll he be doing? Something unpleasant?
I don't think you'd better go, sir.
Oh. Well, what'll I do?
Perhaps you might stop and see Major Ward, sir. Perhaps there'd be something you could do for him, or better still...
What?
I was wondering if you'd like to call Major Ward's wife, sir.
Marjorie?
Yes, sir.
I see. Tell her what's happened. Break it gently, you know. She was very fond of poor Dougal. Good, good, good. Oh, but I say, what'll you do?
I was hoping I could see the library.
Library?
Isn't that where they were when the burglar shot your brother?
Oh, yes. Don't expect to find a fellow now, do you?
No, sir, of course not. I want to look for bullets.
What bullets?
The ones Major Ward fired at the burglar.
Oh. Why?
Why, Major Ward fired all the bullets in the cylinder of his revolver. If one or more is missing in the walls, well, perhaps he didn't miss, after all.
And... the fellow will be carrying one of Ward's bullets in his body.
And we'll put out a call to find a man that answers the description Major Ward gave us.
And who's been recently wounded by a Webley 38 bullet. That's clever, sir.
Thank you, sir.
It'll be simple. Those slugs from a service revolver make the very deuce of a hole in a man, seeing what they do to Germans. Well, I see this case is in good hands. I'm going to go telephone Marjorie.
I was in that library 26 minutes by my watch. I was just concluding my examination when Major Henry entered again.
Ah, there you are.
Major.
I've been trying all this time to reach Marjorie, but the telephone doesn't answer.
What seems to be the trouble?
Why, I expect she's asleep after all.
How's Major Ward feeling?
Still sleeping. Not very quietly, but sleeping. How have you been doing?
Major Henry... I have just made the most extraordinary discovery.
Whitehall 1212, which you are listening to, is compiled from official Scotland Yard records. And this story, like all the others, is true, except for the names of the people involved. It is presented with the full cooperation of Scotland Yard. Research is by Percy Hoskins of the London Daily Express, and the stories for radio are written and directed by Willis Cooper. Now, back to the story of the murder of Captain Dougal Henry of the King's Royal Rifle Corps, which occurred in September 1918. Inspector Gregg had just told the brother of the murdered man that he has made a most extraordinary discovery in the library where the murder occurred.
No, sir. I'm afraid I can't tell you about it now.
Police secrets. Aren't I right?
You could call it that, sir.
Well, I expect you'll tell me in your own good time, won't you?
I probably shall, sir. I probably shall.
Well, then. Now, I think Edmund Ward had better go home.
Well, sir...
Eh?
Well, there's no harm in getting him home.
I should think not.
Yes, sir, quite.
I was wondering something.
Yes, sir?
I'm due at the War Office in 15 minutes.
Yes, sir?
If I could persuade you to drive him home... You're quite through here for the moment, I fancy. You've made your extraordinary discovery.
Yes, sir?
Well, then, I could lend you a car. I think we can spare enough petrol.
It'd be on official business, sir.
Oh, quite so. So it would, wouldn't it? You'll do it, then, like a good chap.
If I may make bold to ask you for a favor, sir.
Naturally. Tit for tat, old boy.
If I could borrow your car to drive me to the mortuary after I take Major Ward home.
And breaking the news to Marjorie.
Of course, sir.
Well, I think so. Oh, I say, the mortuary. You wouldn't let me go there.
This will also be official business, sir.
Oh, of course. Sorry, I didn't think of that. Certainly, you may use the car.
I'll send it back by a police driver, sir.
Oh, I'll have my man drive you, sir. I say, what do you call yourself? I mean, how does one address you? Sergeant? Lieutenant? Were you ever in the army?
Yes, sir.
Oh, really? A sergeant or...
I was invalided out after Passchendaele, sir.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Sergeant.
I was a lieutenant colonel in the Royal Artillery, sir.
I do beg your pardon, sir.
That's quite all right. Forget it, Major.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
I'm ashamed to say I really did chuck my rank about just the slightest bit. I let Major Henry stand to attention a little longer than was absolutely necessary, and I let the other major, the one who had been so grievously shell-shocked, ride in front with the driver. We arrived at Carling Hill and drove sedately up to the small cottage he occupied with his wife whenever he was home. We entered. The place was dark.
My wife should be somewhere about. Marjorie, dear? Marjorie, are you asleep? Marjorie, we have a guest. I'm afraid she's asleep. I'll go see. Marjorie? She's not here.
She's not?
She's not here, you see.
Turn the light. There's nobody here.
She may be in the other room. We have a very small place here. Marjorie? She's not here either.
Could she be at one of your neighbors?
Well, there aren't any neighbors very near. I wonder where...
Shall I help you look?
Oh, no. I'll find her. She's about somewhere.
That her hat there?
Well... Oh, yes, that's her hat.
Well, then she must be here. Wait, I know what to do.
Where are you going?
That's your telephone there.
Yes, but who are you calling?
Put me through to the nearest police station, please.
No, don't do that. I can't have policemen running about.
Inspector Gregg of the CID here, Scotland Yard. I should want a police constable here at once, please.
No, please. There is no necessity to have a policeman here. I'll find her. I don't want any big, flat-footed constable mucking about in my house. Now, listen to me. Listen, I say you...
Thank you very much. He'll be here in half a minute, Major.
But I don't want anybody, I tell you.
I'll wait a moment till he gets here. Now, where shall we look next, Major? The the largest, the most truculent policeman I'd ever seen, shortly appeared at the door, complete with manacles, lantern, and an enormous truncheon. And I returned to the waiting car whilst he and Major Ward began their search. Not with the exceptional grace on the part of the Major, I thought. I would have liked to remain, but I had an appointment with the police surgeon at the mortuary. The body of the dead Captain Dugald, Henry, lay on a white table, now in considerable déshabille. "Sit down," invited the surgeon, and I sat down beside the late captain.
"I wish I was a detective."
"You got a better job."
"You chaps have someone to talk with."
"That's right, we do. Too many."
"Who shot this one?" "He didn't stay."
"If he could, he probably would."
"Where's he come from?" "Somebody'll catch it for shooting an army officer."
"He was in his brother's library with another chap."
"Who?"
"Friend of his. Burglar came in and killed him."
"He didn't know the burglar?"
"Don't know." "You know an odd thing?"
"About what?"
"The burglar."
"What?"
"Other fellow said he shot at him."
"Who shot at whom?"
"Other chap shot at the burglar and missed him."
"Oh."
"An army officer, too."
"The burglar?"
"No, this chap's friend."
"Lots of army officers can't shoot."
"And this one admitted it."
"That's unusual."
"In the library where this one was shot."
"Go on, Daddy."
"Six bullets from a Service Webley. Emptied the cylinder. I saw it."
"What's so funny about that?"
"I went into the library afterward."
"And?"
"Not one of those six bullets was there. In the wall, or the floor, or anywhere."
"Webley revolver bullets?"
"Yes."
"I found them."
"What?"
"Here they are."
"These are Webley bullets."
"Right."
"Where'd you get them?"
"In the captain's body."
"Ah, there's only five here. Where's the sixth?"
"In his tunic pocket. Here."
"How did he get there?"
"Only one that didn't go into him. Flattened out against his cigarette case. See? Have one of the captain's cigarettes."
"Woodbines, no thanks."
"I don't mind. I like Woodbines."
"Blow it the other way. Look."
"I'm looking."
"Sure these bullets killed him?"
"Positive."
"No other wounds on him?"
"None. And answering the question you haven't asked yet, yes, I'm practically certain they are from an Army Webley revolver. Saw enough of them when I was in the Army."
"I'm sure, too. I carried an Army Webley myself a long time."
"Sure enough. Sure enough to convince a jury?"
"Well, no."
"You haven't got a case."
"Who's that?"
"Come in."
"Is Inspector Craig of Scotland Yard here?"
"Tell her no."
"No, madam."
"Who is she?"
"Who are you, madam?"
"Marjorie Ward."
"Marjorie Ward."
"Tell her to come here." "I'm sorry. Will you come here, please, Mrs. Ward?" "Are you really Mrs. Ward?"
"You're Inspector Craig."
"How did you get here?"
"I found a taxi cab."
"You're a genius, madam."
"Where were you? How do you know where I was? How do you know who I was? Where were you?"
"Give her a chance, Inspector."
"Answer me, please."
"I was in the cellar."
"Answer the rest of it, madam. The inspector wants to know."
"I was in the cellar all the time. I heard you and Edmund. I heard the constable come in. He's the one who let me out."
"Let you out?"
"I told him I had to see the Scotland Yard man, and he said..." "Who's there?" "Oh, it's Dougald Henry. Oh, no. He is dead. He is dead. Then Edmund did kill him. Oh. Oh, poor Dougald."
"Don't please, madam."
"Be still."
"Why do you say your husband killed Captain Henry?"
"He the one that had the bullets in the Webley? He the one that was with this poor blighter when the burglar..."
"What are you talking about? Yes. What burglar?"
"Is he?"
"Yes, he's the one."
"What burglar?"
"Your husband said he saw a burglar shoot Captain Henry."
"Where?"
"At his brother's house."
"Robert's house?"
"Robert Henry's."
Where's the burglar?
He ran away after the killing.
Oh, poor Dougald.
And your husband shot at him, but he missed.
It was Dougald he shot at. There wasn't any burglar. Edmund murdered poor Dougal, just as I said he would. Edmund murdered him. I know he did.
You're very convincing, madam, but why should your husband shoot the man?
Yes, why? They were friends.
You tumbling idiot.
Don't call names, please, madam. Both Inspector Gregg and I had grave doubts of your husband's story, inasmuch as the bullets that killed the late lamented are undoubtedly from your husband's service revolver.
But why? Why should he?
Because my husband's crazy. Yes, he is. Long before he got shot, he was crazy. I can prove he's crazy.
How?
Oh, listen to me, whoever you are. There's a history of insanity in Edmund's family that's easy to prove.
But it isn't enough to prove him crazy, madam.
Well, then look here. Look at my shoulders. Does a sane man beat his wife with a whip?
Oh, well.
And look here at my arms.
Better let me put something on there.
This is what he gave me when he locked me up.
But why should he lock you up?
The man must be crazy.
I've written Edmund that I was going to divorce him. And then he came home, shell-shocked.
Shell-shocked?
He was buried alive.
And I hadn't the heart to go through with the divorce. Poor Dougald came here to call. And he was sitting there talking to me. Not about the divorce at all. And Edmund came in. I went out of the room. And then after a while, Dougald left. Then Edmund came back and his eyes were blazing. He hit me with his riding crop and he swore at me. Accused me of all sorts of dreadful things with poor Dougald here. And Dougald was such a good friend of both of us. And when I tried to reason with Edmund, he hit me again. This is the mark of that. There was nobody there except us. He screamed at me, threw me down the cellar stairs, screaming that he killed Dougald. He knew where Dougald was going, to his brother's house. Edmund would kill him, then come back and murder me because he said I was a... I just can't say what he said I was. He slammed the cellar door, and I could hear him raving and screaming. I'll shoot him. I'll murder him. I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
And so he did.
Oh, poor old Dougald. You were the best friend Edmund and I ever had. And he's killed you.
And where is he now?
Who?
Your husband.
He's still at home raving, I suppose.
Oh, I am then, am I?
Edmund!
Yes, my beloved wife. Yes, me. Hello there, Dougald, you. You... I did you in all right, old pal. And now... Oh, there you are, Marjorie. Stand up and be killed, dear. Made that silly great oaf of a constable tell me where you'd gone, and here I am. I'm going to kill you. And you. And you. And you too, Dougal. Killed you once, I can do it again.
He's got a gun.
Didn't know I had another, huh? I'm an officer. I got two guns. Quite enough for everybody. You first. I'm sorry. I don't seem to have any more bullets. Cartridges, I mean. Excuse me, Dougal, for not having any more cartridges, Mark III. I seem to have used them all up killing you. Excuse me, sir. Is there something I can do for you?
Edmund Ward, I arrest you on a charge of willful murder.
Well, excuse me, sir. Sorry, dear. Beg your pardon, Dougal, old chap.
Yeah, yeah.
I warn you that anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence. Major Edmund Ward was duly tried for murder and duly found guilty. He was, however, adjudged insane, and instead of the scaffold, he ended his days at Broadmoor. His wife got her divorce.
Heard today on Whitehall 1212, Horace Braham as Inspector Gregg. Others in the order of their appearance, Harvey Hayes, Guy Spall, Lester Fletcher, Gerard Burke, and Isabel Elson. Lionel Rico speaking. Whitehall 1212 is written and directed by Willa Cooper. America is a country blessed with mountains and forests, woods and timberlands. But each year, thousands of acres of our forests are destroyed by fire. And these are acres of wealth and beauty that cannot be replaced. This is our most shameful waste, because most forest fires are caused by human carelessness. Today, this problem is more vital than ever, because forest fires destroy the natural resources upon which our nation's security depend. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Case Closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Dragnet and Whitehall 1212 at the website, relicradio.com. You'll also find all the other podcasts there, past episodes from this show, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button. If you enjoy it all, you'd like to help support it, click on that donate button. Thanks to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime with a brand new episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.